It's Chris-a-mania, brother.
That's a great question. Look at you, man, with the powerful questions.
Woo!
This is the Chris Van Vliet Show. Chris Van Vliet Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Van Vliet!
Hello again, my friends, and welcome back to the Chris Van Vliet Show. Or if it's your first time here, welcome. Thank you for joining us on all the wrestling podcasts could be listening to right now. Thank you for spending your time with us. Thank you for the ratings and views that you've been leaving. And thank you for being with me on this journey in 2019. Whether it's been here on the podcast or you were on YouTube and you migrated over here to the pod because you're listening at work or you're walking your dog. Maybe you're at the gym. Maybe you were commuting to work right now. Thank you. Thank you for listening wherever you are. And thank you for putting us in the Apple Top 200 last week. That's mind-blowing to me, especially since the podcast is not even 6 months old. So thank you. Maybe you're cooking dinner. Maybe you're doing something. Maybe you're just sitting on the couch. Whatever you're doing, thank you. If you're enjoying this, please take a screenshot. Let me know you're listening. At Chris Van Vliet is where you can tag me. I will repost you on Twitter, on Instagram, wherever it is that you happen to post that. So I'm just stoked that you're part of this. And thank you for leaving these reviews. I'm going to continue reading one on the show to shout you out, to thank you for being part of the audio journey that we're on. This one is from Stock X is Whack. Sorry. That's an interesting username. Stock X is Whack. Sorry. It's a 5-star review. The title is Love, Love, Love. Chris. That's 6 S's at the end of it. Thank you for being you and making these amazing podcasts. I'm always excited when you post a new episode / video. You save me from work every day. And then there's 4 exclamation marks after that. I love exclamation marks, by the way. They're like my favorite thing. I feel like everything I'm saying in life has an exclamation mark on the end of it. So like when I actually like type out, you'll see. You'll see my captions on Instagram or Twitter have a lot of exclamation marks. So thank you, Stock X is Whack. Sorry for the review. Keep those coming. I appreciate it. Also, a big thank you to Samson for the top-notch equipment that make us sound so good and make us sound so top-notch. Without them, I mean, you'd really be hearing nothing. Or, you know, maybe you'd be hearing this. This is what a lot of wrestling podcasts sound like. Let's be honest. You need good equipment for people to realize that you have a good show. So SamsonTech.com has really helped us out. You can check out all their mics and cables, mixers, and awesome headphones like the ones that I'm wearing here. So Frank Mir is an MMA legend. And even if you've never watched UFC, you know that he's the guy who handed Brock Lesnar his first ever loss in UFC. And it was in Brock Lesnar's first ever UFC match. It was in his UFC debut. And if you didn't know that, well, you know it now. Yeah, Frank made him tap out to a knee bar a minute 30 into the first round. However, Brock would go on to get his revenge a year later with a TKO victory over Mir. So they're 1-1, but that was 10 years ago. And there's been a lot of talk over the last 10 years about them having a rematch. And it sounds like it just may happen inside a wrestling ring. I mean, we've seen Ronda Rousey made the jump from MMA to pro wrestling. Frank Trigg, Matt Riddle, Filthy Tom Lawler. Most recently, we saw Cain Velasquez actually doing that program with Brock Lesnar. So why not Frank Mir? He's been training with Austin Aries in Las Vegas and says he wants to make this happen before he's too old for it not to happen. So Frank invited me into his home for this chat. And man, I love how well-spoken he is. He's also smoking a cigar during this interview, which, watch the video. It just makes it that much cooler. He's been a great MMA commentator through the years, and you can totally see why. He's just so relaxed. He's outgoing. He's well-spoken. And I think that it'd be amazing to see him in the ring. I mean, he's been doing like some of the shoot fighting, like the blood sport type of stuff with Austin Aries. It'd be so cool to see him transition one more step into pro wrestling. And he's well on his way. It sounds like we may see him in a pro wrestling ring sometime in 2020. So I really enjoyed this. I know that you will too. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Frank Mir.
Smoking the stogie here. Yeah, thank you for inviting me to your home.
Oh, my pleasure, man. Glad to have you come down here.
Yeah, it's beautiful being here in the Mir residence. We got the Christmas tree behind us here.
Yes, courtesy of Mrs. Mir. Mm-hmm. And
just see her decorating a tree. That's actually a smaller tree for us this year because I finally, after, you know, Bella's 16, so, you know, Jennifer and I have been together now, you know, married for 16 and together for 18. She always wants to do these 9 foot, 10 foot. I mean, we were in an apartment when we first got together, and the tree like bent at the top, you know?
Oh, man.
So finally, I'm like, look, you know, can we just go small? So that's only a 7 foot tree. So, like, basically, 2/3 of her ornaments are still packed up. And she had to like be selective. And then I'm like, I don't know what's worse, having to put them all at the end or having to sit here and go, which one? This one? This one? What about this one? This one? I'm like, this is like clothes shopping all over again. Oh, my God.
You've got tall ceilings here. You can have like a 20 foot tree.
I think, what's the tallest we ever had? I think we went 12.
Okay, 12-foot tree. Wow. Man, jeez. I do like, though, like we're in Las Vegas. It's fairly warm. We're in the desert, but it still feels like, you know, it can still feel like Christmas.
Yeah, it still gets super chilly here. I mean, my pool still, if I don't have the water features on, you'll wake up and you'll hear the water running. It's because it has a freezing sensor. So, I mean, it drops below freezing here. So,
man, yeah. So you're training in the gym every day.
Yeah. I mean, that's my job. And it's also, I enjoy it. I always tell people this when they wonder about that. They're like, you go to the gym every day. I'm all, you know, there's a 90% of the people I'm in the gym with don't get paid to be there. They actually pay a membership to be there.
Yeah.
I happen to be lucky that I'm actually getting, I get to make a living. Like, I don't have to now take a shower from the gym just to go to work, or coming from work and then changing my clothes at the gym. That's more of the norm of what happens. So me training at the gym and training all the time, I'm just blessed that I get to do something I love.
Yeah.
And for some crazy reason, I get paid for it.
But even if you're not training specifically for a fight, you're still in there all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in a gym. My dad came over from Cuba. You know, obviously boxing and judo and wrestling is a big part of the culture there. And when he came over, obviously he was enamored with boxing, but my dad likes martial arts, and so I think he wanted to get more into fighting. So he opened up a karate gym, but our karate, like especially from what he did in the 70s, was very much full contact. And so it looked very more reminiscent of above-the-waist kickboxing, meaning that all the kicks were from the waist up, but still full contact with the hands and with the kicking. And so I grew up in that. I mean, my furthest memory, I can't remember what it was like not to be in a gym. And so, you know, my kids are saying, like today, you know, my daughter, because she's in the GCS Academy, affords her a much more flexible schedule because they're all athletes that go there. So when she gets done today, she was at the gym with me. We're both on the mat while we're drilling. There's a big class, 50 pros on the mat. We're all working out, you know, and there was a combination called off. And there's my daughter with her partner. Yeah. Going, Dad, were we supposed to throw the kick before, after the cross? Like, well, it depends on the feeling, on the angle. You know, so, you know, I mean, who? And at the end, I'm sitting there and she had to get ready because she has wrestling practice, so she didn't do all the live around sparring. You know, she gives me a kiss on the cheek. Oh, Dad, I gotta go home real quick. I'm gonna go get my lunch and then I'll see you later. I'm like, okay, baby. You know what I mean? Like, that's my life.
Right. Well, you're just coming off the Roy Nelson fight.
Yeah.
How are you feeling after that win?
Oh, it's great. You know,
that's your first win in like 4 years.
It was, you know, coming because of the suspension, and then you know, and dealing with that garbage with USADA, and then you know, coming into you know, Bellator. You know, first fight I took off, you know, Fedor, and you know, I was rusty because I knocked him down, but then got crazy and tried to chase him and fought completely out of character and emotional. Ended up losing that fight. And then the last fight, freak accident, which probably never happened again, or since, you know, just a weird breakage with against a clinch against the cage with no mouth. Piece. And so just kind of a string of bad luck that really kind of tests you, because you know, a lot of people, you know, it's easy to stay in the gym when you're winning, you know, at the same time, now you haven't won a fight, you know, and it's going on 4 years and you're sitting there going, oh man. And then now it's not like I'm a guy in his 20s where you're like, well, you know, it's a slump, it happens to athletes, you're gonna get out of it, you know. Now not only am I battling that, but I'm battling them, you know, you're in your 40s now, dude, you know, maybe it's time to hang it up, maybe it's time to call it, you know. And then fighting somebody like Nelson, who has more overhand right knockouts than anybody else in MMA right now, you know, and who I beat previously.
Yeah.
So I knew he was hungry and wanted to, you know, to make sure he took my head off. You know, there's a lot of factors that really I think I'm blessed to have, because I always think adversity and testing yourself like that, at the end of the day, if you survive it, I mean, a long version of the Sun Tzu statement of, you know, that which doesn't kill you only makes you stronger, right?
So as you sit here right now, are there any effects from the Roy Nelson fight?
No, I'm actually good now. I tried to get back in there a week after the fight, you know, against my wife's judgment. It's like, oh, because, I mean, my shin was split. And when you split your shin in the fight, it's not because it was split from the outside in. It's your shin bone cutting through your own. Your tibia is shaped kind of like a triangle, like a sword almost, you know, or one end of it, you know. And so I actually cut my own bone, cut through my flesh. So it's a real deep cut. Probably should have had it stitched up, but I didn't. It was in Connecticut. I just want to get home. And so that took a little while to heal. And then I made it public. You know, I tore my labrum really bad on my shoulder. So that was rough because obviously training for the fight, the adrenaline, I was pumped up. Man, for about 2 weeks afterwards, I even tried, like I said, I went back to the gym. One of the guys, he's a light heavyweight, Corey Hendricks, is getting ready for a fight at the ACA over in Kazakhstan. So, you know, he helped me prepare for the fight. So I wanted to get back. And that's part about martial arts. You get back in the gym and you help you guys out. Man, it was the first day back. We're drilling. He throws a body kick and I check it with my shoulder and pull, you know, and all of a sudden, like, boom, my arm drops. I just walk off. I'm like, I thought I could come back, dude. I can't. My body just, I'm in too much pain. So then I took off another 2 weeks. So actually, this is the first week. I mean, we started hitting the gym a little bit last week, lifting weights and stuff and moving around that way and shadow boxing. And I've been going to wrestling practice with my son, so taking shots and drilling moves with him. But as far as first day back sparring, today was the first day back sparring and firing off. And actually, I felt great. I mean, obviously, I'm 15 years, 20 years older than everybody on the mat. But, you know, I felt
great. Whoop them all, can't you?
You know what? I'm blessed with the fact that...
The answer is yes.
Yeah, I'm blessed that for whatever reason, my father's genetics being Cuban, I'm super quick. And so being my size and being quick, and then add the fact that I know more than most people's coaches know about fighting, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And so my strategy, my timing is just really good. So even today, I went three rounds with three professional fighters, and it wasn't a good day for them. And then round four, everybody's like, oh, you're doing so awesome. Let's go, because we're supposed to do five rounds. And I'm like, okay, I know you guys got the impression that because I'm doing well, but I'm tired now. I'm going to go sit down. So I sat down the last two rounds. I'm like, well, three rounds the first day is not bad, you know?
You look great. Like, what do you weigh sitting here right now?
Well, I'm 270.
That's solid. Yeah.
And a lot of that's to do with my one thing I always made a mistake in the past in my career, especially the last 10 years, because I got so much into lifting weights, is that, oh, I need a bunch of protein. So I very much animal products and just trying to, you know, always thought that size mattered. You know, it does. But with that came a lot of bloatedness. And I think extra weight, especially around my midsection, that wasn't necessary. Mm. And now, you know, I'm still not where I want to be. But if you see the last fight, my body fat is coming down. And a lot of that is first, you know, I'm kind of taking the baby steps. It's been about 6 months now. I gave up dairy, you know, and just won't have cheese or anything, milk products. And then I've pretty much abandoned all red meat and chicken and whatnot. The only thing I still have in my diet besides plant-based is fish. Okay. Yeah, so I can't give up sushi yet, guys. So
you're like a pescatarian.
Yeah. So and making steps, you know, and you know, there's full days that I'll eat, you know, as a vegan, you know, and you know, I have no problem hanging out with Austin. We'll go out to restaurants and we eat the same way. And that's why I always tell people when they ask me, like, well, how do you feel? I'm all, honestly, I tried keto. I've tried this. I've ran the gambit with every way to diet. This lifestyle is the easiest because the food all tastes good. It's easy to eat a vegetarian meal and have it taste good. And and then because it's vegetables and it's not calorically dense, I can eat a lot.
Yeah.
So I walk away from a meal. I mean, I can eat like a half a pound or a pound of Brussels sprouts and it's not bad for you. Right. And you know, hey, if it's made right with a little vinegar on there and flash fried, the stuff is good. You know? Yeah. So, and at the end, it's like, well, you know, it's healthy.
But you mentioned Austin. It's Austin Aries, right, who was recently on the show and is actually just sitting right here.
Awesome.
Yeah, there he is. Oh, there's Austin Aries, everyone. Greatest man that ever lived. Yeah. How did you guys become friends?
Actually, I do a podcast called Phone Booth Fighting. My partner, Richard Hunter, is a vegan. He's been so now for probably 10, 15 years. You know, he's probably the kind of same path I did. Started out like, you know, went to pescatarian, then he became a vegetarian, you know, where he still had eggs, and then eventually, you know, straight vegan, him and his partner, Jen. And so our podcast runs the gambit. He's extremely left. I'm much more of a moderate. You know, I'm still pro guns, but I'm pro choice on, you know, things. So I don't know. I always tell people, where does that put me? I'm okay for guys to carry a gun at their wedding, and as long as they marry another, you know, and they're allowed to marry men, I don't care, you know, which I think just makes us libertarians, because I'm like, dude, I don't think the government should tell you two 18-year-olds what they have to do with their life. So as long as you're not hurting somebody else, who cares? But anyways,
sure, yeah.
So his book that came out, his press personnel came and contacted us, and because of Richard's connection that we brought him on. And it was funny because at that point I had a stint for my life where I thought I was eating like a vegan for about 6 months, you know, and just basically I was doing like, oh, it's French fries and it's vegan, right? Yeah. I always had my suspicions of, you know, we're omnivores, we're bears, we're supposed to have meat, you know, like, come on. How can you don't see any guys that look like me and pushing weight around or throwing guys through the air. You know, then, you know, here comes Austin, a little spark plug, fucking sits down. I'm like looking at his arms. I'm like, this dude's a real athlete. Like, look at his shoulders, you know, his body stature. So I was like, really? Like, you know, and then I asked the same stupid question he's probably going to get asked about 1,000 more times before they ever bury him. Is that like, well, how do you get all your protein? You know, right. And so, you know, and he was actually not a dick about it. And you know, and answered my question. He goes, surprisingly, he was like, I think because it was coming from a genuine place. Some people ask that question because I think they think they're going to mock your answer. You know, like someone asks you something like, oh, yeah, well, how do you manage this? And it's like, dude, you already have a preconceived notion. You're trying to set me up. Where I was just like, no, honestly, man, like, look at you. You're muscular as shit. Like, how are you able to do that? So I think because he saw the genuine, you know, interest in me, that he was just like, well, look, I mean, honestly, look, I eat a mac and cheese and I do it this way. And you know, cashews and then the lentil and, you know, it's 30 grams. He goes, are you eating 30? I'm like, no, hold on. I mean, so from there it sparked an interest and we started talking and hanging out. And then I think the next evolution of it was that, guys who keep trying to make breaks into pro wrestling and stuff, and there's always been kind of an animosity or a rivalry, I should say, between fighters, you know, professional fighters and MMA or wrestlers, right. Professional wrestling. And I never really understood why, because it'd be like me being mad at Keanu Reeves. Well, you're not a real guy. What are you doing? It's like, well, hold on, man. This is a different platform for entertainment. You're an entertainer too. You know, you're not just walking around beating the hell out of people. You're putting on a pair of shorts. People are paying to show up to be entertained by your ability to fight. There's rules to this. It's still a sport. And then under that guise, I realized, I'm like, well, professional wrestling is the same as making movies. It's a different genre or different medium for the same genre of, hey, it's all martial arts.
Yeah.
So then we started, I told them, hey, I have an interest in trying it out. You know, I've been doing stand-up comedy. You know, why not? You know, let me go out there and try. So I went to the gym with them. We went to Future Stars of Wrestling here in Vegas. And the first practice, actually, I interrupted him about halfway through. I was like, dude, I got to apologize. I never had a clue how much there is to this. Because it was funny. I realized that I was saying something to him leading up to it that was insulting. And I didn't realize I was being insulting, which Austin, you know, is contrary to belief, is not a constant asshole. He actually let me off the hook with it, because when he was like, well, you're only going to need to learn certain spots, you're only going to have to learn these aspects of my craft. And my answer to that was like, no, I want to learn it all.
Yeah.
Being genuine, being like, well, no, I don't want to take shortcuts because I already established a name. Yeah. Let me learn everything. That's what I meant by it. But then I could realize that I'll never learn everything there is about what he's learned in 20 years. Just like if Austin were to tell me, hey, man, I want to learn everything you know in the next 6 months.
Yeah.
It would be an insult to be like, really? I've been doing this since I was 4 years old. You think that in 6 months you're going to know everything I know? Impossible. But he realized I was just being humble and not being a dick, where I'm glad, because a lot of people could have taken it that way. So that's when I told him, I said, dude, I'm sorry. I apologize. You're right. There is no way I'm going to learn even a quarter of everything there's to learn about this craft.
Were you always a pro wrestling fan?
I was a fan back in the 80s when my dad, you know, obviously during that, Macho Man and Hulk Hogan and whatnot. And then still when, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin came on the scene and the, you know, NWO, almost all my friends, everybody was super interested. But then once I turned professional in fighting, honestly, it was a divergence.
Sure.
You only have so much time in the day, and I was spending my time watching videos on Pride and UFC, and I wasn't paying attention to the pro wrestling scene at all.
Well, you kind of had like disparaging things to say about pro wrestling when you first fought Brock,
right?
And you know, like, obviously your opinion must have shifted a little bit at least since then.
You know what, my opinion of Brock changed in the sense of I still want to stomp his ass.
You want to kill him, don't you?
I don't want him to be the first octagon related death anymore. Paraplegic, maybe? No.
You want him to be the first squared circle death, though.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
So, no, obviously, look, honestly, you know, he has kids and a wife. I hope that he can breathe the next day after I fight. I just wanted him to struggle a little bit to do so. You know, just maybe just can't chew a steak for a month would be nice. And so, but as far as his ability to react and sell in there, blows my mind, because I see
how pro wrestling ring.
Right, because yeah. I see how hard it is for me all the time. I mean, there was one time Austin was doing a splash down there, and I'm supposed to lay and show me how to take it. Then he goes, and then I do my interpretation of a sell on it, you know, and he just starts laughing at me. I'm like, dude, what's wrong? He goes, until you get somewhat better, I'm just gonna keep laughing at you. That was horrible, you know, because my whole life I've been taught not to show pain, not to show discomfort, you know. Even in the fight with Roy Nelson, one of his left hooks inadvertently just kind of got thumbed in the eye. And so my vision in my right eye completely went out. Like, you know, you jam someone hard enough and it's just a blur.
Sure.
Well, if I start blinking and touching my face,
then he knows.
You know. Yeah. So I have to sit there and I'm looking at him and I'm moving my head and I can't see for shit. I can see with my left eye, so I have no depth perception. I'm sitting there going, okay, just it's gonna come back, it's gonna come back. You know, you know, just, and then all of a sudden, you know, pump a jab a little bit. I'm like, okay, let me walk away from my blind side, and then boom, my vision came back in. I couldn't tell anybody and show, you know, even if, you know, his guys will go to complain to the ref or something like that. I'm like, dude, you're showing your hands.
Yeah.
Don't, you can't suck it up, you know? And so, so that reversal of having to portray emotion and tell a story with my expression,
Yeah. That's
difficult. It's hard.
So you've worked a couple blood sport matches,
yep,
which is like the work shoot matches. Do you have intentions to work an actual pro wrestling match?
Yeah, I just think that right now those opportunities came for me, you know, working at the blood sport and then the event they had here, the Future Stars of Wrestling event that Austin will actually be on next weekend. Those are easy transitions because it's just, you know, it's
grappling.
So that I do every day. I roll with guys all the time where it's like, all right, I can roll with a person who weighs 120 pounds. And if I feel what you're doing, I can go with the throws and maneuvers, and you know, I know how to be a good partner and work. And so that wasn't hard. There's no ropes there. There's no having to sell really, you know, as much. So I didn't want to fool anybody and go, well, I'm ready to jump right into a full-blown match. I'm like, well, no, look, if I can start being in that genre and start to move and take these baby steps, why not? Yeah. You know, the equivalent of if you're starting a professional fight career, it's like, all right, your first fight, you're going to wear headgear, there's going to be no elbows. All right, you're making steps towards what you're trying to do, and why not? There's so many new moving, you know, factors and so many moving parts. The more you can eliminate certain aspects of it to focus on and then increase and add to your plate as you get better.
And focus on your strengths, which you have, you know, many of them from the career that you've had. So where are you at right now with your pro wrestling training?
I still count out loud when I'm running the rope. So
1, 2, 3.
Yeah. Twist. No, there's still a lot of thinking. And so,
you can bump.
Yeah. Actually, taking bumps was probably one of the easier aspects for me because it's just tumbling. You know, sitting like, oh, okay, this part's cool. Yeah. It's the, honestly, probably if I had a report card, taking bumps or falling, you know, I'm athletic. You know, I could do a cartwheel, you know.
Sure.
That part is an easy transition. It's the selling that's the hard part for me. You know, and knowing how to, and also, too, how to feel another guy. I'm not used to you cooperating with me. Or, in turn, I'm not used to giving up parts of my body.
Right.
You know, if someone starts to reach for my arm, my intention is not to go ahead and give you my arm.
Yeah.
You know, my intention is, oh, you want my arm? Like, that's one of the first things I teach people mostly in fighting is like, hey, if you feel somebody wants something, even if you don't know what they're doing, don't give it to them.
Yeah.
You know, if I feel you going for my leg, I don't know. I might not know what leg lock you're going for, but let me just remove my leg from the equation.
Yeah.
You know, if you pull something, I'm going to push back. You know, and that's just kind of like a real dumbed down version of until you can catch up, like fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
You know, like if I'm pulling your arm, don't let me have it. And now it's like, no, now it's the opposite. Now you're going to want to go ahead and position and move in a certain way that you're able to flow with another human being.
Well, we just saw Cain Velasquez in there. I feel like the door is wide open if you do want to make this happen.
No, and I do. Well, here's my thought process on it. Obviously, I could just jump in there and cash in on a couple times and show up. And I hope that Cain's not doing that. Well, I guess I don't care what Cain's doing. But but I kind of did the same thing when I do stand-up comedy. There's a novelty of what's his name? From 2.5 Men, the actor.
Oh, yeah. Charlie Sheen.
Charlie Sheen. Yeah. All right. There's the Charlie Sheen factor, Right. And that's when somebody really doesn't know what the fuck they're doing in something, but they have such a name that they can probably fake it and make it. Right. So he did that one man show and it was a complete disaster. Like yes. he had no intention.
But he made all kinds of money doing it.
Sold out, yeah. fucking jumped on a fucking dollar. And no
I
one,
actually went to one of them.
Was it as bad as people said?
I just kind of sat there and told stories for an hour and we went.
All right. Yeah. That's not quite as bad as some of the reviews. They just scathed them. And then his response to it was like, well, fuck you. I got your money. I'm like,
yeah,
I don't want to be that guy. And then so in other aspects of my life, I haven't been that guy. When it comes to podcasting, doing stand-up comedy,
yeah.
I don't want to just cash in and go, well, I have my name. I've done my work here. I think one, it's not only is it you're shitting on your fans, I think you're shitting on the other people that have been part of your sport. Like I was upset when CM Punk got to have a UFC fight for his debut. Well, if all of a sudden I, my first ever pro wrestling match, get to jump into an AEW or a WWE or match,
yeah.
what a fucking asshole. You know what I mean? So just on my name, I jump out there. I'm not going to look very good. I'm not going to do a great job. But and what does that say to all the other guys that have worked, that have wrestled for 50 fucking bucks for fucking 5 years? You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a spit in their face. And now I was the one upset before when one other guy came over in my sport and just took another. That was my problem with it. I wasn't mad at CM Punk for getting an opportunity. I was mad because it took opportunity away from somebody else. I'm like, well, there's one less guy on the card now that he's been working his ass off to be there in this world.
Yeah, yeah.
You just jumped over and get to take his spot and be on a main card. Like, that's kind of bullshit. And yeah. so I'd be hypocritical if I was that same guy. So I genuinely want to learn and put in and build myself up. Now, obviously, I'll never be at the same level of somebody who has just, you know, like Austin, who's wrestled for 20 years. I won't be able to do a 15-minute match and just flow and figure it out, you know, 5 minutes before the match goes, hey, is your spot, is my spot, we'll go here. No, I don't like this. Okay, yeah, give me this, you know. That's not going to happen for me. But as far as giving a genuine effort to be respectful of the guys that have put in their work and time, I want to be that guy. And then the way I look at it, the reason why I like it is because the same reason I like movies. People are always being inspired, right? And it draws people over. I was inspired by Bruce Lee and Jim Kelly back, you know, in the 70s, you know, when they came out with, you know, Enter the Dragon. Steven Seagal, Van Damme, these guys inspired me. Were they real fighters? Yeah, Jim Kelly was, you know what I mean? Bruce Lee even is arguably, who knows, you know what I mean? Like, obviously all the tales of him being, you know, obviously this ferocious fighter, but I don't know if he really was or not. I never seen him in a UFC fight. I never saw him fight, you know? He never did kickboxing matches. There was professional boxing back then. He didn't do that.
Yeah.
And so, but I was still inspired by him. He still got me to want to train martial arts and countless other people, right? So I think that that's one thing that I can bring into into the ring is that I can show people martial arts still working. And I think that's something that's kind of, when I watch wrestling matches, and that's probably why even I, you know, look, sometimes I look at guys, I'm like, hey man, that's awesome. You can do some flips and jump around, but everything you're doing is completely unrealistic. It would never work. But I remember watching wrestling matches in the 80s and going, oh, well, that would hurt. Oh, that would hurt. That would tear your arm off. Like, there was a certain sense of realism that really, that I think they've completely divulged from. And I think there's a hunger for that now. Because if you watch, like, you know, the John Wick movies with Keanu Reeves, you know, you got guys now that, you know, they show him YouTube clips of him training and doing 3-gun challenges and, you know, working from long gun, shotgun, and transitioning to a sidearm. So now people go, oh, obviously that's a person under perfect conditions, not messing up. That'd be like a guy shooting 30 3-pointers in a row. It's possible.
Yeah.
Not probable in real life, probably, but it's still possible. He's not standing out in the parking lot kicking it and all of a sudden it flies 500 yards and goes, it's like, okay, that could never happen.
Yeah.
So I think that bringing that realism back into the pro wrestling world with my legitimate background in MMA is really honestly the way to go. I mean, that's I find it humorous, but I mean, hell, you have guys in sport now that, like, you know, their penis is a weapon. You know, guys in grappling, they're getting thrown around. You know, it's comical, it's funny. But I think that it doesn't inspire kids to want to learn martial arts. And, you know, if wrestling was a real martial arts at one time, and then the entertainment aspect of it, I think just added more people to have flair and be interested in it.
There's a real dividing line, though, between wrestling and pro wrestling. Like, pro wrestling is, it's entertainment, you know?
Yeah, but it can still be based in reality.
If Joey Ryan wants to flip people with his dick and people cheer for it, then, you know, that's the thing.
Yeah, but it's the same thing as watching a movie. I find watching movies that are realistic, when I see guys clearing a house and I go, oh, look, That's actually based on reality.
Right.
You know, when I see other movies, I'm just not interested. When I watch the guy with the six gun that never runs out of bullets and he just stands there and everybody falls down and he can walk. You know, even sometimes, I mean, I watch, I'm like, wow, the bad guys never seem to hit him. You know what I mean? Like, that bothers me.
Well, maybe Joey Ryan has a magical, you know, package. You don't know till you try. I don't know. Maybe he could legit flip you. I don't know. Probably not.
But I think that is just a... And no discredit to anybody else, but I think that is just a symptom of the fact that everybody wants to show how athletic they are, how much entertaining they can be. And I think that, you know, this is still a combat art, right? It's still based on the fact of combat. And I think bringing back a certain element of realism to it,
yeah,
it can still be entertaining because there's still a story being told. There's still a narrative, just like a movie. I don't think that the narrative has to be that I can flip better than you, or I'm more athletic, or I can do this. I think there can be a narrative that's great, you know, hey, puts more pressure on the writers, but then just, hey, step up your game. Make the writing entertaining and make the moves legitimate.
You know, Ken Shamrock just took a dick flip recently.
Did he really?
Yeah. Yeah. Did you know that? Yeah.
I did.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
What's the last thing Ken Shamrock did again?
Took a dick flip. Yeah.
Before that.
Yeah. I'm just saying. You know, he's in your world. if we look ahead into 2020, Frank, does this mean that if you don't want to jump right into AEW, don't want to jump right into WWE, does this mean we'll see you working some indie matches?
Yeah, I think that's actually the area right now, just because... Yeah, Dr.
Austin Aries is your manager.
Yes, yeah. And so I think working that well. I mean, also too, I keep talking to Austin about, like, you know, tag teams. I think is easy. Also too, a method in, because already, like, you know, it kind of sucks because I've gotten to watch a couple of Austin's matches from the outside. But I think being in there and being with somebody who's a veteran, knowing what they're doing. I mean, I wish we can take him in MMA and me do that. We're like, hey, we're going to have a 2-on-1 fight. I'm going to do 80% of the work. You just jump in here and you're going to be in here and get to learn, like, what an advantage to take over.
Sure,
but
yeah.
MMA doesn't really afford that. I mean, there's certain parts of Russia we can do it, but but for the most part, you know, but in our world, or in the pro wrestling world, I can jump in there and watch and see how things are being done.
Yeah.
and take these intermediate steps so that, yeah, I can build up a legitimate repertoire.
Everyone's clamoring for that third match in the Brock, you know, trilogy. Are you saying that this might happen in a pro wrestling ring instead of in an MMA forum?
Well, right now he's retired MMA, so I don't know if I'm going to be able to get that. But
we know how retirements in MMA often work, though.
Yeah, true. I'm hoping. Look, I think that it only makes sense the two of us fight again. I mean, I made him tap the first time. He finished me with strikes the second time. I mean, both the fights, I think, were exciting to people to watch.
Yeah.
So... I don't think he wants... I'm sure it bothers him every time people talk about me. I made him tap. I made him scream uncle. He sat there and, you know, slapped my leg, asking the referee to save him from, you know, disfigurement. He has to sleep with that, you know what I mean? And same thing, hey, he kicked my ass in one of the fights. I mean, I got up, didn't know where I was. I mean, he gave me a good ass whooper. Why wouldn't he want to go there and finish it off, you know, one last time? I do, you know?
As you were heading into that first fight with Brock, were you like... I'm just going to destroy this guy.
No, contrary.
Really?
Honestly, it upset me a little bit because I looked at him watching film and whatnot and getting prepared. I knew who he was from wrestling at Minnesota. So I looked at him as, oh, I'm fighting a guy who was a national champion wrestler.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, he lost his junior year to Stephen Neal, you know what I mean, who to me was one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. This guy, you know, his junior year, Stephen was a senior. You know, Stephen Neal was already a national champ from his junior year. I think the runner-up his sophomore year. So, I mean, he's up there with pedigree that's extremely high. I mean, Neal went on to go ahead in 1999 was the world champion. Dan Hodge recipient. And then, you know, the only reason why he didn't continue on wrestling is because he went to the Patriots and got a couple Super Bowl rings throwing guys around there. So, you know, I looked at Lesnar as a very legitimate threat because of his wrestling background. Big, strong, athletic guy that knows how to wrestle and is going to always be a good position, right? And then I was backstage getting ready for the fight, you know, the week of, doing PR and stuff. And one of the other fighters on the card, and the story would be better if I could remember who it was, but I just was so, like, in shock that after what he said to me, he goes, I just remember the kid kind of, like, grabbed me on the back of the shoulder and goes, hey, man, you got to do this. It's, you know, it's MMA versus pro wrestling. We can't look
at it.
And I looked around. I'm like, oh, you think he's a pro wrestler? Please tell me no one else thinks this guy's just a pro wrestler. Like, the dude's a national champion wrestler. like legitimately, you know, like I'm like, what? So then that actually put a lot of pressure on me because I'm sitting there going, people are going to think that he's just a pro wrestler. Like, no, give me anybody else. Most of the other pro wrestlers don't have a background in combat. I think that's why the wrestling looks the way it looks. They don't really know what an armbar is or really legitimately know how to hit a double on a guy who doesn't want to go down. And so, you know, there's some guys that look at it, I see him throw a punch. I'm like, I guarantee that dude's never even been in a real fight in his life. Oh, God. And so, and here you have a guy in Lesnar who legitimately was a fighter. You know what I mean? The guy, I mean, he didn't become the champ because he you know, he sucked, you know? And so that was upsetting. And so I was really focused to take him out.
But Brock's got to know he's going into this fight with you and you're like a legit killer. Like, you know, he's got to see the tape. I remember watching live when you broke Tim Sylvia's arm. I want to ask you about that. When you slapped on that arm bar, were you like, I'm going to break his arm?
No, actually, I was holding on because I locked up the arm bar and he actually slipped his elbow out. But I wanted to transition to a triangle, which was to get to my head to the other side. So when he went to lift me up, I just bridged to make myself very heavy as a kind of a lever. Yeah. I always tell people it's like if you lift up a stick from the end and it's long, it's going to be heavy.
Yeah.
If the stick were to, you put the center of gravity of the stick underneath the weight of the stick, well, now you can lift it up with a little bit more ease. You know, like holding a baseball bat, holding it up vertically, you know, now it's about balance. But if the bat were to swing out, well, now the bat's going to have some weight to it because of the leverage. So when someone goes to pick you up, you want to be as long as possible to make it to where now it's difficult for them to slam you. So that's all I was doing was just kind of leveraging my body out so that way he would have to fall back down. And when he fell down, that forward pressure would basically throw him into a triangle. So it's a move I had done in practice many a time, especially in jiu-jitsu. So as I'm doing that, all of a sudden, his arm just gives loose. Yeah. I just feel pop, 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 and it opens. So I'm like, oh, I don't know what I have, but I have something, and it's being destroyed, so let me keep driving my hips forward. So I just kept driving forward until Herb Dean came in and told me to stop the fight. So when I rolled off, I was like, oh, the fight's over with. And then his mannerism afterwards kind of threw me because, I mean, my coach and I were looking at him. Like, he goes, did you break his arm? I'm like, maybe his elbow just dislocated. I'm like, dude, something popped. Something opened up. So like, oh, we're going to restart the fight. I'm like, cool, just start me back in the arm bar.
Yeah, you wanted to keep fighting.
Yeah, but the way I looked at it, I was like, hey, I had your arm. Give me back your arm, and we could get starting. So that was kind of the disagreement we had. You know, I was like, well, put me back in the same position.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you give me your arm, and we could start all over.
Yeah.
So then they're like, well, we'd have to start you neutral. And so then my coach is freaking out, but I'm like, eh. You even see me kind of like, hey, man, we'll do it again. We'll do it now. All right. So I start wrapping my glove up, like, all right, start the fight again. Because in my mind, I was just going to throw a head kick right at his arm. You know, because, you know, when he goes to block it, I'm like, we'll find out real quick if it's broken. Which, thankfully, Herb, you know, the doctor came in, I think it was Goodman, stopped the fight. Because had they, could you imagine, I'd have thrown a full blast kick at his arm and it wasn't detached, it might have been bad for our sport.
What about the other broken arm, the Nogueira?
Yeah, that one I felt bad about, and I knew that was going to happen just because, you know, an American versus a Brazilian jiu-jitsu is, you know, even though it was Japanese art, was really modified to its current state in Brazil, you know. And when I had him in the Kimura, I remember once I had it slipped to a certain angle, I'm like, okay, it's done, I have you. You can see me in the fight starting to look for Herb because I knew he's not going to tap. So as soon as the referee jumps in, I can let go of pressure. You know, because I'm still a fan of Nogueira's, and I'm not a guy who's trying to. I've never tried to maim somebody in our sport. If you get hurt by me, that's because you don't protect yourself and the referee didn't get in there. I'm not trying to get in extra. I've never been that guy that, you know, if the referee grabs me, I keep twisting. I think that's wrong. I think that, look, we're both martial artists, and I always tell this to people. When people sit there and go, how much do you hate the other guy? I'm all, I mean, there's guys I've liked less than others. But for the most part, if all of a sudden in the middle of my fight, let's say the power goes out and they say, I'm sorry, you know, Dana comes out, hey, look, you know, fight's postponed, we'll come back in next week. You know, everybody go next door to the bar, drinks are on us. And I'm sitting at the bar having a beer. Who do you think I have most in common with? Who do you think would probably be the guy that I'd be sharing a beer with? The guy in the front row who's screaming obscenities and has no clue, stand him up. What the hell's going on in a fight? Who hasn't been in a fight since he got beat up in fifth grade? Probably not. You know what I mean? Like, I'm probably going to be hanging out with the guy I was fighting. He knows what it's like to train. He's into the same interests that I have. He has injuries and pain and same fears and same angst and same goals that's a dude I'm going to share a beer with. Yeah, yeah. So as far as wanting to shred his arm, I didn't want to. I was hoping it just dislocated at the elbow when it did finally pop. And then you even see later when I stood up and I was doing the interview, like I'm kind of looking over at him and the fact that they're bracing his arm, I was like, well, shit, it's just a dislocated elbow. Like, what's going on? Maybe dislocate the shoulder. And then I never in my wildest dreams imagined the Kimura, the hammerlock, could have destroyed his humerus that way. You know, spiral fractured, you know, they had to put it back together with, you know, a halo.
You're a strong man with great technique. Of course, yeah, it could happen.
Well, I just thought that the weak link would have been the shoulder. I sure, figured I would have tore a shoulder. Yeah. Tore rotator cuff, which is a horrible injury. You know, I don't want that anybody, but I thought that the soft tissue would have went first, but I guess at the angle that I had it, it broke at the humerus.
Is pro wrestling the transition for you out of MMA? Like how many more years do you think you have in MMA?
I'm going to keep fighting. I mean, I'm 40 now, and there's guys that are in mid 40s and later that are still very successful in MMA, especially the fact that I'm a heavyweight. It makes it easy because look, Demetrius Johnson loses 0.2 of his reaction time. He's fighting guys that are fighting at 125 pounds, you know, flyweights that are, yeah, you know what I mean? Like it's
lightning fast.
I'm over 200 pounds. We're quick, but I can lose 0.2 and still see a right hand coming from the best fighters in the world. It's not the same speed. Even, you know, Deontay Wilder, who's probably has the best right hand in all of combat sports, right? You can still see it. It's not so fast. Now, Lomachenko, even though he's a southpaw, still the backside punch, that punch a little bit harder to see. If you lose 0.1 of reaction time, you ain't seeing that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why even in boxing, which is very much of a reaction sport of eye-hand coordination, you see champs and guys competing, you know, look, Ortiz, who just fought for the title, is 40 years old. You can be...
Yeah, Randy had a great career.
Yeah, I mean, even at light heavyweight, you've seen, I mean, I still think he won the fight. Dan Henderson, when he fought... The Englishman.
Bisping?
Yes, Michael, yeah. Bisping. Yes. Yeah. Like, you can't even remember.
I'm picking up all the hints here.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's like we're married. yeah, so, you know, Bisping at 46, I mean, hell, he dropped him and floored him in two different rounds, which I thought both those rounds, it looked like Bisping was in survival mode. Those should have been 10-8 rounds. You know, even if Bisping wants to win the other three by a point each, 10-9, 10-9, 10-9, you win two rounds by 4 points now. I mean, just it should have been his fight, you know. Yeah. So I mean, and we're making this argument about a 46-year-old.
Yeah. So other than Brock Lesnar, who are the matches that, you know, as you continue on here, that you need to have?
Oh, I really, besides Brock, because of the history that we have, I don't really have anybody else that meets that namesake. Look, when I go out there and compete in martial arts, I'm still competing for the same reasons I competed the very first day I ever stepped on a mat. You know, at 6 years old, my first Taekwondo tournament, right? I'm out there to prove myself. And maybe if I fall short, why did I fall short? Now I can go back to the gym and work on it, you know? You know, that's all arts are about an expression of yourself so you can see the working parts and see how you think and see how you move and where are your shortcomings, where are your strengths? And that way when you go back to the drawing board, you have somewhere a direction to grow. That's why I want to keep fighting. I don't know what I would do if I retired. If I really didn't have a reason to get up and go train, I don't know.
Well, it sounds like you'll keep training no matter whether you're fighting professionally or not. It's just part of your...
Well, it's been a blessing and a curse. the story I told earlier about having my daughter.
Yeah.
My daughter now is going to be... She'll be the champ. She's going to be the number one female fighter in the world.
And what's her name so everybody will know?
Isabella Mir. Bella Mir. And Lady Mir on Instagram. She's already a state champion wrestler.
How old?
16. She won the state championship in eighth grade here in Nevada for the girls, which is a high school tournament. So she's competing against seniors and juniors. And I mean, I think her longest match was 30 seconds, you know. You know, she goes and trains with me at Syndicate and trains over at Drysdale's. And she's going with full-grown women that are world champions. And, you know, and I've had to give a couple pep talks to them afterwards. Like, it's okay. I know. She's just different. You know what I mean? Like, you know, women, you know, they handle their losses a little bit differently. But so that being said, I'm always going to want to be on the mat with her and training with her. I mean, hell, my dad still jumps on the mat and trains with me, you know, and he's in his 60s. So I think that once if you really love martial arts and you're doing it because of the love of it, I can't imagine why, just because if you're not getting paid for prize fights, why wouldn't you train anymore?
Yeah.
That's not
right.
Only reason why I do prize fights is because it affords me not to have to go to work, and I get to go to the gym all day. It's kind of like this circle of like, okay, well, if you want to train all day, yeah, I like training. It's cool. Cool. And at the end of it, if every 3 to 6 months you jump in and let everybody see you fight somebody, you can keep training. I'm like, all right, that works for me. If it makes the wife happy and I get to go to the gym, I'm good, man.
Do you have another Bellator fight lined up as of right now?
Right now, contractually, they have until I think about February to give me my last fight on the contract. But I haven't had a chance to speak with Scott. I text him after the fight, but you know, he has a lot of big things going on. So I'm hopefully that when he gets some time, he'll hit me up again and we can sit down and talk if I'm going to extend. But my thing is, I really would like to have much more of an open ability, unless you're the champion. This whole being held under one promotion, you know, I mean, look, I'm fighting once every 10 months, you know. There's bare knuckle boxing now that I'm heavily interested in. You know, there's all these different ventures. And unless you're someone's champ or the number one contender, why can't you fight other places, you know? Unless they have a fight for you. I mean, I could fight every weekend, you know. Why not? You know, I mean, there's only so much time on this earth. I don't want to just spend it waiting in the, you know, in the ring, the wings.
Bare knuckle, is that something we might see you
in? Oh, yeah, 100%. Really? I will do a bare knuckle fight.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's also to my devious master plan. I want to bring back bare knuckle MMA. I think it's much truer to the original art, you know, for a hand-on-hand combat, you know. You know, people don't get to wrap their hands and put gloves on before they get into a street fight.
Yeah.
And so punching someone bare knuckle, you can't do it the same as if we're fighting professionally with our hands wrapped. You can't hit as hard. You can one time, but then,
yes.
You know, you have quite a few bones in your hand that are not really designed to hit someone in the skull. And so that's why when people sit there and go, oh, bare knuckle box is so much more dangerous. I'm like, no, it's not. What are you smoking? Not talking about us.
Or this cigar that I've been interrupting. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
You've barely been able to smoke it at all.
We'll get to it.
Delicious.
Yeah, thank you. JP grabbed them up from Cuba.
Oh, awesome.
There you go.
There you go.
So anyways, my hand being wrapped and reinforced with tape and gauze and putting a glove over it, there's a misconception. People go, oh, that makes it safer. I'm like, no, it doesn't. You know why we do that? Because there's more knockouts now, because people can hit harder. It protects the hand. It doesn't protect the head. I would fight anybody in the world in a stand-up fight. I mean, even Francis Ngannou, Deontay Wilder, they want to hit me bare knuckle, I'll take it. Let's go.
Yeah, wow.
Because you're not going to be able to, I guess the easiest way to explain this to people at home is if I said, hey, you see that the cinder block wall in your backyard, go ahead and blast it bare knuckle. Most people are going to like, I'm not going to hit that. I'm like, cool. But if you let me wrap your hand, if I had, you know, Stitch, Jacob Durant back here, we can wrap your hand and put a glove over it. You'll hit it.
Yeah.
I mean, it might jack up your, you know, and that's an extreme version of it, but you'll punch the bag hard because your hands are reinforced. They're wrapped up and gloved. You go bare knuckle on it, you can't, your wrist folds over, you break bones in your hand, you can't generate the same amount of power. Now it's more realistic to what a real fight would be. It's like, well, you can kind of go medium power to the head, you better place your shots very well because you're going to bust your hand up. And you know, even the bare knuckle we have now, it's not true bare knuckle. They're allowing them to reinforce the back of their hands and their wrist. I wish it would just go back to the true art of it, but like there is no material on from the elbow down, naked.
Wow. Well, okay. So we're going to see you in bare knuckle, and sounds like we're going to see you in pro wrestling. And really, it's the best time for you to be getting into pro wrestling with the success of Ronda Rousey. Yeah. Cain Velasquez getting back into this. Matt Riddle, Tom Lawler. There's all this, you know. It's perfect for you to get in there too.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and then bringing, like I said, I think it's a necessity now because look.
Oh, okay.
Shh.
Hey.
Sorry, my attack dogs, my killers.
You can hear their attack dogs. Yeah.
What was I thinking?
It's the perfect time to get into pro wrestling with, you know.
Well, the
groundwork's been laid there,
and I think that it's a necessity because look, 20 years ago, you know. a guy could put someone in an armbar and he can, you know, harvest the energy of the crowd to fight through it. I think now most of the fans know that, oh, that's bullshit. You're in an armbar. You got to defend it. There is no muscling out of this. There is no, you know, because
20 years ago it was Shamrock, Severn, and Tank Abbott, I guess.
Yeah.
Were the I guess they were the three that were in pro wrestling.
Yep. They moved over to Abbott. I think then Abbott became what, with the WCW, and then
he was in
the
three,
contract problem.
He was in three count. Remember? Yeah. The boy band with Shane Helms and Evan Courageous.
Did he really?
Yes. Yeah, you'll have to. I'll show you after this. It's great.
Okay, I'm going
to
be embarrassed because, you know, it's funny. I watched a fight with Abbott. He had a fight with Ferroso. Their rematch was in a backyard with a bunch of guys just drinking beer and smoking cigarettes. And I fought Tank Abbott. So I'm watching this fight, and it was just hurt my feelings. It was sad. You know, when you sit there and you see somebody that you're like, oh man, that dude was really, you know, it's hard for me to tell my kids, like, hey, I fought this guy. This guy was dangerous, scary dude. He put people in comas. And then now we're watching him move around. I'm like, oh, please stop. Someone turn the camera off. Did he not have a buddy there?
Wow.
Yeah, it was bad.
Well, as we wrap this up, once again, thank you so much for inviting me into your home. This has been a great chat.
Yeah, thanks, man.
What advice do you have for someone who's watching this video and wants to break into MMA?
Obviously, just, you know what, life, martial arts, everything is not a sprint. You know, if you sit there and start setting goals, like, I want to be here in a year and I want to be here. Look, long-term goals are great, but they don't override short-term goals. Sitting there going, hey, look, I want to join a gym and I'm going to allot that with my work schedule and my social life with my, you know, my significant other, I'm going to have 2 hours a day to dictate to training, you know, 5 days a week. That's the first steps that people, you know, they, really you have to make. Can you set yourself up for success? You know, like, well, I'm going to be a fighter. I'm like, okay, well, how are you going to get there? And everybody wants to be at the top of the mountain. I'm like, cool. So what trail are you going to take? Which direction are you going to go?
Right.
Do you have the right shoes? Do you have the right gear? Do you have the right, you know, the map? Do you know where you're going? Do you have the right people to assist you along the way? So I think just sitting back and being logical about how you're going to get through the next 6 months. Mm. All right, you want to be a fighter? That's great. What are you doing for the next 6 months?
Yeah.
What is your training going to look like? What gyms, what money do you have to train for, pay for training? And then on top of that, the next level is once you're in there and you are moving around, you only have one body. You know, I really wish that I would have, especially the mixed martial arts world, you know, everybody's about taping it up and drop a couple Advil and just, you know, just forget about it. Just, you know, muscle, you know, nut up. Jesus, I hate that expression. Rub some dirt on it, you know, bullshit mentality. And man, I'm paying for it a heavy price now. You know, I mean, yesterday or the day before, we did our Christmas photo shoots with my children and my wife. And they had different rooms as you're going through to take a picture with Santa Claus. And, you know, keep you entertained, you know, making cookies in one, decorating cookies, and Mrs. Santa Claus is another, and, you know, elves. And there was one room where it was like a snowball fight. And they had these little soft, like spongy Nerf balls that were simulating a snowball fight.
Okay.
So my daughter, who, you know, she's firing, you know, 80 mile an hour fastballs at people, you know, she jumps out there and my wife goes, oh, jump out there. So here's my kids playing and I go to grab a ball. I threw one and it felt like someone stabbed a knife into my shoulder as I throw the ball. And I can't even play with my kids certain sports without warming up and getting ready. I'm like, well, I could do this, but I better drop a bunch of kratom and take a bunch of CBD. And then let me go ahead and do a, you know, external rotation warm up. And that's all from being stupid when I was young and not really respecting the, hey, you're injured. Right. Chill out. You know, oh, you busted your ankle. Maybe don't go ahead and go for a sprint right now. Why don't you, we can work on this. There's other ways around it. So I think being respectful of your body and realizing you are mortal. Yeah. As much as fighters have an immortal mentality that I can overcome any situation, look, father time and reality of your body, there's a, you're still an animal, you know.
Yeah,
yeah. You have limits to what you can do. And look, the limits can be impressively far, but they're still there. And so being respectful of your body is something I wish I would have really taken to heart when I was younger.
Well, once again, thank you again for this. Appreciate it. Looking forward to seeing you in a ring again and in a cage again.
Thank you. I can't wait to be there.
It's going to be awesome. Thank you again. This was great. Well, there you have it, my friends. That's such a great chat. Man, he's so well-spoken, isn't he? So it's not a matter of if we'll see Frank Mir in a wrestling ring. I think it's a matter of when we'll see Frank Mir in a wrestling ring. A big thank you to Frank for inviting us into his home to do the interview. Also, thank you to Austin Aries for connecting Frank and I, and also for driving me to Frank Mir's house to make that interview happen. I mean, you heard Austin was off camera there. He's just having a drink, just enjoying the conversation. But yeah, big thank you to Austin for connecting us
And, you know, he was very hospitable. Austin was very, very hospitable in Los Angeles. So, you know, big thank you to him for that. And thank you to you for listening to this all the way until the end. Please do me a favor. Take a screenshot. Tag me. Tag Frank Mir. Let us know what you thought of the interview. And take a second to subscribe to the podcast and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And really, you know, just help to get the word out there as we close out 2019 and we head into 2020. We've got big news coming up for 2020. This isn't official yet, but I'm going to throw it out there. It's not official. I don't know when, I don't know where, and I don't know with who, with whom, but we're taking the Chris Van Vliet Show on the road in 2020. We're going to be doing some live interviews, both the podcast and the YouTube channel interview, on the road in a theater, and I want to do it with you. So let me know where we should do it. Let me know with who we should do it with. So keep an eye out on my Twitter and my Instagram at Chris Van Vliet for the official announcement there, but just know that this is happening. And I probably shouldn't be saying it yet because it's not quite official, but we're looking at February 28th in Chicago. It's the weekend of the next AEW pay-per-view. So it's just a matter of who's going to be on that stage doing the interview with me. Who would you want to see and who would you want to get a picture with after? So it's going to be the live interview and it's also going to be a meet and greet afterwards. So keep an ear on the podcast. Keep an eye on the YouTube channel and look for the announcement on Twitter and YouTube as well, because that is happening soon. And man, I'm so excited. I'm so excited to share this with you, because usually it's just me and one other person and a camera, often in a hotel room or like this one, just, you know, in Frank Mir's dining room. It'd be so cool to share this experience with you. It's such an intimate, awesome experience, and I can't wait to share it with you. As we head into 2020, and it's not just the year 2020, it's 2020. It's perfect vision, right? 2020. And I want you to have that perfect vision every single day as we head into the new year and in the new year as well. Don't be pushed around by the fears in your mind. Be led by the dreams in your heart. That's from Roy T. Bennett. And I think that's so fitting as we close out not just the year, not just 2019, but as we close out the decade. Don't be pushed around by the fears in your mind. Be led by the dreams in your heart. Got one more podcast in 2019. We'll see you next Thursday. And oh man, it's going to be such a good one.